Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
Welcome to our January-February 2020 podcast. To start off the new decade, we have a special double feature. Our first story, Go, Now, Fix, by Timothy Zayas, features an unlikely narrator who exhibits great pluck in the face of disaster. Our second story, by Meredith Lazaga, The Refraction of White Lies, examines love and forgiveness from a unique perspective. Enjoy our January-February episode.
Please enjoy Go, Now, Fix. Written by Timmons Isaias. Read by Emily Hockaday. Pittsburgh author Timmons Isaias teaches at Seton Hill University in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. His poetry appears in markets ranging from Asimov's to 5 a.m. and Elysian Fields Quarterly, the literary journal of baseball. Recent fiction appearances include stories in Asimov's Analog and Lightspeed. The author's heart-stopping new tale introduces us to a plucky hero who must go, now, fix. The Model TD-8 Panda Pillow, serial number 723756, lay forgotten behind a pallet of unsold magazines for 2 years, its battery power slowly ebbing, and hung on a display for 3 months, power ebbing further until, on the very day it would have been stock-rotated to oblivion, a customer bought it. The Panda Pillow was quickly unwrapped, hustled onto the plane, inflated, used as a pillow for 6 hours in a darkened cabin, and then was lifted into the overhead storage bin and locked away. The customer never registered Panda Pillow, never synced it to the customer's personal constellation, never recharged it, never executed any personal bonding procedures. No person, and no device, ever bothered to read any of its instructions. While this was not optimal ownership behavior, Panda Pillow waited, as it had always waited, weakening as it had always weakened. One does not complain. One does not summon customer support. One is merely a pillow. For 2 hours and a bit more, it waited. Then came a very sharp bang and short screaming whistles, and the overhead bin erupted into the cabin. Clothes and bags went everywhere, and Panda Pillow almost tumbled out, its clasping hooks barely keeping it in the bin. A haze of powders and exploded aerosols hung in the cabin, but was already clearing. The scene made Panda Pillow's system surge. Everything was wrong. People were dazed, some were hurt, there was blood. The air was going away. With its selfie app, Panda Pillow recorded 2 panorama shots and 2 close-ups before its battery finally declared the need for emergency shutdown. Shutdown initiated. Panda Pillow took 1 last survey of the area. A few rescue masks were dropping here and there. And why was the air all nitrogen? Comfort, defend, said its pillow programming. Powering down wouldn't do that. Panda Pillow, number 723756, invoked customer support. The protocol for emergency was, be quick, so Panda Pillow sent the images quickly, in low resolution first, to save power. It could hear faint people voices over the customer support line, sounding puzzled. Do we still support those things? Didn't we have trouble with that whole... Is that a movie set? Movie sets don't fly at 80,000 feet that I know of. Why isn't it sending proper resolution for crying out? Panda Pillow heard a worrying gasp. Oh dear, pizza shops in heaven, customer support said. No wonder you called in. Direct feedback pulses followed. And you're nearly flatlined. We need to get you to a node, fast. Panda Pillow went sharply simple. Visual sensors cut out, local sound dialed down, danger signals dropped, things went standby. There was a quick sync to the plane's infrastructure host, and faint customer support voices talked about calling in an incident. But Panda Pillows don't do that. So instead, it locked to a simple orientation grid for the five closest multi-nodes. It was instructed to dangle head first out of the bin and take snapshots in all five directions. The third closest node got destination painted on it, and then Panda Pillow lost situational awareness while its base function protocol took over. Things came back slowly in stages. First air pressure data, then air composition, then radiation, then local audio. All this information passed straight through to customer support. It's a pillow, said a background voice. They don't need quick power. It only has one charge speed. I don't care. They want video ASAP. The plane is barely talking to them. Visual half-res let Panda Pillow see the cabin and the child's lap it was sitting on. Emergency face masks were dangling all over, but no one had theirs on. The defend urges were already hammering, but a software upgrade was loading so the autonomous driver couldn't engage. Across the aisle, in the row in front of Panda Pillow's owner, a t-shirt with lace trim and lace panels was twitching. The behavior of the shirt was very odd. An emergency override focused on that, went full resolution, and zoomed on two effectuator limbs that seemed to be tangled in the t-shirt. Panda Pillow instantly learned that this was a model 17X3 passenger rescue drone. Among the drone's simple abilities was putting emergency masks on unattended passengers. The autonomous drives turned on and an override snapped down. Defend! Go! Now! Fix! Panda Pillow hopped across the aisle and slightly overshot. Low air resistance. It hooked two claws on the shirt and stood up. It reached under the shirt with a rear paw and engaged the drone's carrying hardpoint eye bolt, and then stretched. In 2 seconds, the drone thanked it for the assist and requested release. Panda Pillow let go of the eye bolt, put the shirt, now slightly torn, in a folded pile on the passenger's knee, and realized it was close enough to somebody's hip charger to draw power. As the drone delicately applied the masks to the middle passenger and the window passenger, Panda Pillow nudged the thing to be alert to the child across the aisle. Doing that threaded Panda Pillow, emergency access request, into the drone network, and its system started a whole new file of alarms. There should be 16 of the drones deployed, but only this one and the two all the way at the back of the lower level were out. Clearly, these drones were essential. One set of four seemed to be trapped in their hutch, so Panda Pillow crawled up on the seat for line of sight. A collapsed panel was blocking the hutch, and Panda Pillow gave itself a go, now, fix, and began hopping from backrest to backrest. The hutch was 12 rows back, and the urgent problems grew worse with each hop from seatback to seatback. A woman's face had been torn open, and her tongue hung out the side and along down her neck. 2 rows behind her, all three passengers had horrible wounds below their knees. A puddle of blood, steaming, spread into the aisle, but Panda Pillow stayed on course. Masks first. Panda Pillows were clear on the importance of breathing, of not blocking nose or mouth, of not tolerating bad air chemicals. All its alarms were maxing out, but breath seemed topmost, and those drones would be solution multipliers. Panda Pillow urgently needed solutions, because every ignored alarm meant a failure report being sent to corporate, and they were already piling up faster because it hadn't been bonded and so couldn't prioritize just one customer. Making everything worse, Panda Pillow kept slowing down. It hadn't picked up much charge yet, and all this processing ate power. Software alarms kept filling the cache, but the result was confusion. And voices on the comm line kept muttering about outdated patches and unsupported packs and not giving instructions and no product manuals. Then power got so low the managing system shut off those data channels. which was good, because then Panda Pillow could focus on freeing those drones. It could barely identify the drone hatch at first, since four rows of the overhead panels, along with some luggage, had dropped onto the seat backs, bridging from headrest to headrest. Panda Pillow sensed a node in the armrest below and dropped down between two customers to power and plan. Pinging the trapped drones was little help. They had, all four together, pushed on the hatch, but it only opened at the bottom by 4 centimeters. They needed 12. They had their own node in there. They weren't powering down, but they also weren't getting any guidance from maintenance. Panda Pillow damped down all the alarms but this one. They weren't helping. It climbed over the window seat passenger, who groaned quietly, and looked around the seat at the situation. There was space at the bottom, but it couldn't squeeze through to get to that space. Too many carry-ons to push, and it wasn't designed for pushing. Crawling back to the aisle, Panda Pillow swung around to the next row and squeezed along the passenger's knees to the armrest between the middle seat and the window seat. Two devices were inserted there, but Panda Pillow was on emergency duty, and so it lifted them away, slid them into seat-back pouches, and sat on the node for 6 seconds to consider. All power to the processors. Something about the situation resembled the crooked neck protocol. This wasn't a crooked neck, but Panda Pillow was low on power and low on time remaining and shut down the decision tree at 5 seconds and moved into the gap between the cabin wall and the debris. The space got tight, and it deflated by 50%. Squeezing higher, deflating more, sliding two paws up, it was able to hook on above. Then it inflated itself at cruise speed. The debris budged. "Try the hatch," it signaled the drones. When they pushed, Panda Pillow knew because part of the hatch pushed its left side. "Stops at almost 6 centimeters," they said, which was 6 centimeters short of saving many lives. "Belay pushing," Panda Pillow signaled, not sure where that phrase came from. How could it have forgotten to avoid the hatch? Stupid, stupid. Panda Pillow seemed to be too narrowly focused. Power must be about gone. Defend, slide, deflate. Get that claw hooked again, and this one, too. Visual cut out, but Panda Pillow was almost there. One shift. There. It inflated as efficiently as possible. As it hit 70%, it pinged the drones to try again. 7.5. 7.9. 8.6. And Panda Pillow got to 100% inflation, but kept going. 105%. 110%. 120%. And struggled to hit 125%. 7A is outside, said a drone. 8A is outside, and 9A is outside, and the next two. One thing, said 10A, but Panda Pillow could barely understand because power shutoff had begun, again. 10A outside. Feel free to belay trying, said the last drone. Panda Pillow had enough juice to deflate to a 60% stop point, and enough presence of processing to unhook its claws. It dropped free, rolling into something soft. There was no power, and Panda Pillow shut down. Panda Pillow felt delicate touches and something being tightened around its neck. Calm came up, and 10A was right there. Power was coming in. Not very much, but some. Visual came on, quarter res, and 10A finished adjusting a band, the thing around its neck. "Mobile micronode," 10A said by comm. "Gotta get going. This aircraft is deeply fucked." In an instant, the drone was gone. With widening awareness, Panda Pillow could see that two of the passengers were now wearing rescue masks, and the third, sadly, no longer required one. It moved over people and under debris toward the aisle, but it gave all three passengers a number 4 panda kiss on the left ear as it went by. At the aisle, those dampened alarms all kicked back in. Every place it looked, things were wrong. Blood, chaos, very little air. There was a lot more information, too, because Panda Pillow and the drones weren't alone anymore. A couple of suitcases had powered up and joined the fray. 2 beverage carts with a lot of local knowledge had networked a grid of things, and some important sharing was going on. 30 or so personal devices had synced, and they expressed a lot of opinions, but without effectuator limbs, they couldn't do much. "The pillow is back," it heard on the customer support line, and, "Why is he back there?" Still focused on the air, Panda Pillow attended to the discussion of hull breaches and decompression. The plane was flying steady and level at 80,000 feet. The current assessment listed 18 breaches in the passenger deck levels and some others down in the cargo hold. The repair bots down there were on the job. There was only one repair bot stored up here, and one of the breaches had gone right through it. The drinks cart had onboard repair bots too, but only one was free. The alarming news was that while the piloting system could save the day by flying down to breathable air, it wasn't talking to anybody on board. The rescue drones were getting masks on the passengers and crew. The suitcase and rear drink cart were patching holes. None of the passengers seemed awake enough for comforting, and one of the suitcases was already freeing another set of drones. Plugging the breaches to fix the air situation climbed to top priority, so Panda Pillow asked if the forward drink cart needed help. Indeed, it did. Something had crushed part of the drawer the bot sat in, and liquid was raining into the drawer. Could Panda Pillow send visuals? Could Panda Pillow inspect? Bottles and cans were leaking all over the top of the cart, so the cart asked Panda Pillow to knock all the drinks off the top. The cart handed up towels and helped it sop up the puddle, and that stopped the rain in the drawer. The drinks cart system had been able to pry the damaged corner loose, but something else was wrong. Panda Pillow hung over the little railing and looked. The drawer handle was snagged to an eye bolt with, what was that mess? Hair? Human hair? Various processors took up the question, while the drinks cart brought out the pretzel bag scissors and cut the hair away. Ah, yes, the crew person lying next to the cart must have snagged her hair on the way down. And why didn't she have a rescue mask? The pillow's talking to somebody, said a voice on customer support. Hey, Pillow, who's your buddy? Who you talking to? Panda Pillow's quick poll showed that none of the devices was communicating outside except for cargo. And that was just outgoing data and acknowledgements. Only the old Link 2 ports were functioning. The whole world had shifted to Link 4 since Panda Pillow was manufactured. It promptly sent visuals and as much of the local conversation as it had bandwidth for. Its thinking cleared up a bit then, because the outgoing stuff stopped the annoying update from trying to download. Panda Pillow heard, Holy toast, the thing is still flying. Send all this across. Another voice muttered, The pillow needs some power. The repair bot was decanting itself from the drinks cart, and the processing grid, 70 devices by now and calling itself the quorum, prioritized the remaining holes. The repair bot sang out, Here I come to save the day, and went directly to the hole that had killed its colleague. Come along, Mr. Pillow. Snag some of this loose clothing as you come. Sweaters are good, and shoes work. Shoes are good. Something was draining Panda Pillow. All the alarm types, all the hurt people, and the broken things. Panda Pillow wanted to comfort the customer support people, who sounded so unhappy and worried, but they seemed to need its data stream more than anything personal it could do. This repair bot was amazing. It had a spray that allowed it to turn all sorts of things into patches. It had a gel that you could smear around the patch, and it would glue the patch in place, forever. Panda Pillow kept handing materials to the repair bot and to a multi-tool smartphone that had pitched in alongside. Aircraft integrity kept overriding the priority of individual passengers, but Panda Pillow did squeeze in time to help with a couple of tourniquets. There were still 6 breaches left, but air pressures coming up came over the network from dozens of devices at once. Panda Pillow was slower to notice, but air pressure was coming up, and so was oxygen, which reduced its defend alarm. But comfort would climb if people came around, and now it noticed that the masks had worked and people were moving and groaning through the masks, and if the customer had just synced the pillow on purchase, as recommended, right on the packaging, there would be only one person to attend to. But... Visual cut out, the data stream dropped, and so did the customer support voice link. Local data went to dead slow. Look. Alive. Devices. Isn't anybody keeping a camera on this Panda Pillow? It needs power, and I mean right now. Shut down. When Panda Pillow relinked to the quorum, it wasn't necessary to reestablish the data link to customer support, because one of the NecTorque units had already hacked Panda Pillow's customer support link, which was still the only open communication to the ground. It heard, It would be nice if somebody would cough up a manual for this thing. And then its priority fell so low that customer support dropped the call. When visual came on, Panda Pillow looked up into the eyes of a 6-year-old girl. Panda Pillow knew she was 6 years old because her phone said she was. She had her own node, which ran the device that kept her heart pumping, and Panda Pillow was drawing power from that node. Not good, not good. So was about to turn that link off when her phone begged it not to. No, no, she's got plenty of storage, and what she needs right now is a Panda Pillow to hug. She is very frightened, which is bad for her heart, and she is alone on this flight. Please. And besides. The besides turned out to be 2 rescue drones that took off the depleted mini-node and carefully hung 4 fresh ones around its neck. Meanwhile, the phone told it that a military hyperfighter was now flying next to them, sizing up the damage. Air pressure was 80% of cabin normal, but the passengers still needed masks. Then a sharp crackle, and 4 rows back, a passenger window cracked, letting air whistle out. The quorum network calculated how long it would take for it to blow out entirely. The closest passenger, awake, put a small day pack over it, which promptly sealed the window. Advice poured in, but the repair bots both screamed their frustration. They had no more spray. They had no more glue. They had nothing. Panda Pillow rolled over in little Samantha's grip. It made a calculation, and another, and more, but at the same time, it said to her, "Sam, I need to go over there and help with that window. That window is dangerous." Panda Pillow knew this would be another failure to comfort in its long string of failures. Samantha looked over to the window Panda Pillow indicated with one paw. She nodded once, took a big, big, big breath, and flipped off her rescue mask and her lap belt and hopped across her seatmate so quickly that Panda Pillow couldn't object. And then they were jumping over bodies and junk until she reached the right row. And then she tossed Panda Pillow right to the window. She was flashing back to her seat before it landed, and the network was flooding with admiration when both repair bots asked just what the hell it thought it was doing. "Spec sheet. Plan. Defend." "They made you with double sheet Kevlar?" Panda Pillow tried to position itself over the day pack that now blocked the window, and then inflated itself enough not to be sucked through. "Can you glue my hooks in place, or tape them? Will that give you time to think of something?" Panda Pillow's growing sense of failure was beyond critical. With all the failure reports, failures to comfort, failures to defend, the customer would have been due for some kind of humongous refund if only they'd bothered to register. The bots slipped 2 clipboards under Panda Pillow for stiffness. They taped. The quorum network concocted 3 types of glue from materials that were on board, so they glued. They enclosed it in a coffer dam made from hard-shell luggage, and when the window finally failed, Panda Pillow number 723756 was able to go rigid enough to hang on for as long as the nodes around its neck could power it. In the movie, they showed Panda Pillow fighting off space pirates and then piloting the plane to safety in an old-fashioned human cockpit, which is nonsense because Svenska CV-226s never had cockpits and their guidance control box wouldn't have fit a Panda Pillow, even fully deflated. In reality, a limpet repair missile docked on the plane's hull, took over the onboard computers, which had gone into defensive shock, and flew the thing down to an airfield near lots of hospitals. There weren't any space pirates to speak of, either. Panda Pillow never went near the control deck, and it was barely able to listen to the quorum network as they slowly reconnected to the outside and finally reported the successful landing. Even relaxing, once the windows ceased to be critical, the mini nodes were exhausted and it started losing things. Processing to half, visual to quarter. The movies also show Panda Pillow being taken off the plane in a parade of applause following the stretchers and gurneys. No. The plane was a disaster, and it had taken hours to remove the recovering humans, the barely alive humans, and the bodies. The EMTs ignored the pillow, which they couldn't even see under the encasing cofferdam. The repair bots had requested permission to uncover and unglue it from the broken window, but they'd been told to leave everything as is for the investigators. The quorum slowly dissolved, adjourning, seen, die. So Panda Pillow just hung, invisible and ignored, in the evacuated plane for half an hour before a special detail of federal marshals came rushing onto the aircraft looking for a certain pillow. A very particular and specific pillow. The plaque in the display case explains that this semi-autonomous plush device racked up the highest number of duty failure citations ever recorded, achieving this feat in a single hour and a half, while also mentioning that it was credited with helping save an airplane and almost 200 lives. The display is clear about the death toll. There are pictures of the damage, of wounded being taken to ambulances, of funerals. There are copies of testimonials from surviving passengers, from family members, from museum visitors. There are pictures of Panda Pillow being held by the young man from customer support, with other CS people in the background. They are all beaming big, big smiles, and they are all wearing panda pins. Their eyes are sparkling in the light. The display case is an octagon, in the center of an atrium, and is very popular by day. At night, the building is empty and dark, and with a single key light shining down on the octagon from above. Twice each month, the director shows up in a limousine after closing hours and whisks Panda Pillow away to the children's hospital, specifically to the critical wards, where its comfort protocol is exercised, and where defending is almost impossible. Part of its legend is that this particular TD-8 has never been updated. This is true. It is repaired at the Teddy Bear Hospital, however, if it gets worn or damaged. It has also never been registered, never been bonded to a single person, so it comforts all those it can, as needed. After the hospital visit, the director returns to the museum and opens the octagon case. And each time, right before he powers the pillow down for the night, he takes advantage of his privilege as the museum's director. He gives Panda Pillow a hug and a pat on the head. He says, "You defended. You comforted." Then he puts it back in its case, closes the door, and goes home.
Up next in our special double feature, we have The Refraction of White Lies by Meredith Lazaga. Meredith Lazaga is honored for her first publication to appear in Asimov's. The family of The Refraction of White Lies is partly based on her own, particularly the dark-haired daughter with implacable demands for bedtime stories. When not working as a pharmacist or a mother of two, Meredith is spinning her daydreams of androids and air cars into her first novel. Her abbreviated imaginings can be found on Twitter at LazagaRx. Please enjoy The Refraction of White Lies.
Every marriage has its secrets. Mine is no exception. I've been lying to my wife for the last 10 years. She lies about growing up in a two-story colonial, about slipping between the stair banisters until her head got stuck when she was 7. Her dad smeared her with petroleum jelly to squeeze her through, and her mom spent 2 weeks washing it out of her hair. In addition to false memories, my wife has a PhD and a position as a research scientist at NNI, Neo Neural Innovations. She works there from 8 to 5 every day, creating more electronic brains using her own. Without knowing she has one. To truly simulate human behavior, Ellen needs to believe that she is human. Knowing the truth would paralyze her neurocircuitry with an existential crisis. Even worse, she would be unhappy. And I want my wife to be happy. Morning sunlight pours into our white kitchen. I crack an egg into a hot pan and it sizzles. I circle the pan 3 times to the left and then to the right while it cooks. Both Ellen and I like our eggs scrambled. She comes up behind me and gives me a kiss on the left ear, then the right. "Good morning, Fuzzy Bunny." "Good morning, Jelly Bean," I say. She insists on these ridiculous pet names. Programmers and their senses of humor. "Daddy?" says Charlotte from the top of the stairs. I pass the spatula to Ellen. "They'll be done in a minute. Don't let them burn." She tends to get distracted. An inability to prioritize input, said her creators. I rush upstairs so quickly my foot catches on the top step. I almost crush Charlotte falling into her outstretched arms. She hugs me fiercely. Her tangled black hair smells like sweat. "I had a bad dream, Daddy," she says. "What happened?" "You went away and forgot me." "I could never forget you, Gumdrop." I shepherd her into the bathroom and brush her teeth, then dress her in a red sweater and matching pants spotted with red hearts. Let's go downstairs. Mommy is making breakfast. Charlotte sighs dramatically. Daddy, she's going to burn it. No, she... The shrieking fire alarm tells me Charlotte is right. I just turned away for a second. Ellen holds the frying pan at arm's length, our breakfast now a gleeful conflagration. Charlotte clings to me in terror as I try to set her down. Put it in the sink! I pry Charlotte off and grab the fire extinguisher on the wall. Ellen drops the pan, and I spray it with hydrocarbon surfactants. White foam fills the sink and dots the countertops. Sorry, says Ellen sheepishly. It's all right. You just burned some eggs. I scrape them into the trash. I can always make more. Ellen glances at the clock. I have to get going. I'm sorry, sweet pea. Charlotte reaches for the egg carton on the table. I'll get you some more eggs, Daddy. Oh, don't touch those, gumdrop. Charlotte plucks an egg from the carton. Daddy, catch! It arcs towards the stove, 3 feet away from me. No problem. My hands are as gentle as the cradle. Splat! The egg hits the still-hot stovetop and sizzles. My hand waits in midair, empty. Wasn't even close. Ellen frowns. Pumpkin, are you all right? I stare at my useless hand, opening and closing it. What happened? I should have had that. Of course, I'm fine. Just a little distracted. Ellen turns my chin with a finger, raises her phone, and flashes a light into my eyes. Your pupillary response is almost 1 full second. Are you sick, Daddy? Charlotte stands on her chair. Are you going to go away? Sit down, gumdrop. Ellen, please, you're scaring her. My pupils have nothing to do with my butterfingers. I push her hand away. I'm going to make an appointment with the doctor, says Ellen. Do you have to go to the hospital, Daddy? To Charlotte, the hospital is a terrible, nebulous place where people go and never come back. No, gumdrop, I'm fine. You need a physical. I'm making an appointment. I just had one. It's been 3 years. Are you sure? 1,022 days. So not quite. 2.8 years, I rounded up. All right, I'll go. Waste of money. Ellen already has her phone out, making an appointment as we speak. There's no arguing with my wife, especially not when she remembers every detail of the last 10 years perfectly. Now you're going to be late. Ellen kisses me 3 times, once on the left cheek, then the right, then on the lips. I'll let you know when the appointment is. Love you. Love you too. The words form automatically, naturally, but also full of guilt. I hate lying to her. She's almost out the door when I see her laptop bag still in the kitchen. Wait! You almost forgot this. Thank you, Sugar Melon. She takes it gratefully. I swear I'd forget my head if it wasn't attached. Bye! She disappears through the front door. I hope she doesn't have a bug or a virus settling into her circuits. I remake breakfast and wipe down the kitchen while Charlotte eats. Time to work on your letters, gumdrop. From 8:30 to 9, we practice handwriting. Then I braid Charlotte's hair and tie a smock around her neck before we paint watercolors. After that, Charlotte watches television with a snack while I vacuum, mop, and scrub every surface in the house. At 11, I make lunch, a grilled cheese cut into 4 isosceles triangles. Charlotte eats 2 bites. I don't know what she subsists on. Nap time, I announce. Her face turns red and tears form in her eyes. Here comes the tantrum. But, do you want a story? Yes! At 35 pounds, she's getting a little heavy to carry up the stairs. I lay her in bed, under diaphanous pink curtains hanging from a canopy. Once upon a time, in a faraway land, there was a princess named Charlotte, who had a baby polar bear. They were best friends. It's silly tripe, but Charlotte loves it. She falls asleep with a cherubic smile. While peeling the potatoes for dinner, my hands slip and I clip my thumb. Damn! The bleeding stops quickly. I throw away the blood-spotted potatoes right on top of the burned eggs. My phone buzzes. Ellen. Doctor's appointment for 6:30. Doctors never have anything nice to say. Every slight ache or tingle turns out to be cancer that wasn't there until the doctor said so. Ellen doesn't subscribe to my logical fallacies, but I believe ignorance is bliss. Charlotte wakes up grumpy from a distressingly short nap. I placate her with juice and fruit snacks. Then she lavishes me with kisses and hugs. You're the best, Daddy. Peach Pie, put your shoes on. We're going outside. Why? She twirls around barefoot until I pull her into my lap and slide her shoes on. We're going to play catch, because there's nothing wrong with me. Play with Charlotte for a while, tell Ellen I'm fine, she can cancel that appointment. I trace my fingers over the baseball's lumpy stitching. In college, I played baseball and studied economics, and neither panned out into anything that paid much. For extra money, I signed up for a behavioral study. The interview was a week-long interrogation. Did I think it was all right to push someone? If the train was coming? Was it all right to steal? If my family was hungry? When was it all right to kill someone? They must have liked my answers, because I was accepted. They revealed I'd be living in a domestic environment with a synth. My job was to teach her, Ellen, how to be human by treating her like a human. I had to sign my life away in non-disclosure agreements. They never said she would be beautiful. My Ellen has blonde, helical curls and an hourglass figure unchanged by time. And they never said she would be sweet. She's always worried about me. When she learned my favorite food, she made chicken cordon bleu every day, poorly, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, until I asked her to stop. Politely. That's how I treated her. Polite and patient, but distant. Until one night, I walked into my bedroom and she was lying on the bed, wearing only her curls around her shoulders. Indistinguishable from a real woman, and yet unlike any woman I'd ever seen. Except the eyes. I could see them in her eyes, a lens reflected back at me, recording me. Ellen looked crushed. I thought you... I do. I turned out the light. The next day, I tried to leave. How could I have done something like that to her? If she could choose, she would never choose me. I half expected the researcher to arrest me, but he said sex is merely another facet of human behavior. And did I like it? I almost decked him for asking. She begged me to stay. Was it another woman? What had she done wrong? Was it all the chicken cordon bleu? I stayed for her. What if I left and they gave her to someone else? Someone less polite and professional. To make it right, I proposed 6 weeks later. The pure joy in her face reassured me. If she believed her joy was real, couldn't it be real? Get ready, here comes a fastball. I wind up, rotating my arms 3 times before throwing the ball underhand in a low, wide parabola. Beautiful. I know I'm fine. Charlotte catches it easily. Got it, Dad. Good one, Gumdrop. Now send it back. She mimics me, windmilling her arm until she suddenly releases the ball. It flies toward me at a good clip. Too high, I jump. Smack! It slams into my forehead. Charlotte disappears, replaced by a field of blue. The world spins on a shifting axis. Charlotte is belly laughing. She loves slapstick humor. Charlotte? Gumdrop? Don't go near the road! I try to stand, but I can't even bend my knees. Charlotte blots out the sky, standing over me, still chuckling. Daddy, do you need a hug? Get up, old man. You're fine. I force my knees to bend, like snapping tree trunks. My legs shake as I stand. My trembling hand can barely close around Charlotte's. Let's go inside. She digs her sneakers into the grass. But I don't want to go. Charlotte, go inside or no bedtime story. But I want a bedtime story. Then go inside. Okay. She trundles to the back door. I busy myself cooking dinner, trying not to think about what's happening to me, or what will happen to Charlotte when I'm gone. I'm glad I didn't let Ellen talk me into adopting another baby. I don't know why she's so insistent. Whenever Charlotte cried as a baby, Ellen cried too. It didn't bother me in the slightest, which made her even more upset. I slide the steak onto a plate at 5:24. Ellen steps through the front door at 5:25. Honey, I'm home, she calls. Dinner's ready. Charlotte, come to the table. Ellen sits down and starts cutting up Charlotte's chicken tenders. Steak is too chewy for her. Any further symptoms to report? No, I lie. Mike, she says. I'm not a very good liar. Not now. I nod at Charlotte, who's drenching her dinner with ketchup. You better eat something. I'm not hungry. I slide my arms into my jacket. Then you should get going. It's only 4 miles, but it'll take 20 minutes at this hour. I turn away and face the door. I can't look around at everything I might lose when I hear what the doctor says. Ellen wraps her arms around me from behind and rests her cheek on my back. Don't worry, I'm sure it's treatable. If only I had her axiomatic certainty that every problem can be solved. I've been waiting for an hour. The receptionist delivers the same canned apology over and over. Thank you for choosing Health Forward Associates. The doctor will be with you shortly. In someone else's voice. It's a crude imitation of Ellen. A chunky metal thing with a pole neck and a screen for a face. Ellen texts me she'll put Charlotte to bed. I don't envy her. She doesn't know the bedtime story, and Charlotte won't go down easy without it. All of the other patients shuffle out, and I'm alone by 7:30, when the receptionist flatly says, Mr. Ward, report to room 3. Thank you. After another 20 minutes, the doctor finally appears. He's younger and better looking than me. I return his handshake firmly. I'm Dr. Jenkins. Nice to meet you. How are you, Mr. Ward? I'm fine. How are you? Then I laugh nervously. He smiles. Sorry about the wait. So what brings you here? My wife made the appointment? That's not unusual. She said you're experiencing some weakness? Yes, she said my pupils are slow and I'm having some trouble with my arm and... Oh, yes, let me have a look. He takes my arm and moves it in every direction, pulling on it and bending it through every angle. His smile fades into a frown that deepens with every movement. What is it? Nothing serious. He looks deadly serious. I suspect your levels of acetylcholine are low. I'm going to give you an injection and we'll see if that clears everything up. How's that sound? Acetylcholine injection? Never heard of such a thing. That's the cure? Something like that. I'll be right back. He leaves and doesn't come back. Instead, a nurse enters the room, carrying the syringe. Her eyes are augmented, fitted with 2 hexagon nuts with multi-spectrum lenses. A camera shutter opens and closes inside her pupil as she's blinking. In her hand is a syringe, uncapped, the needle pointed at me. Mr. Ward? We'll have you fixed up in a jiffy. Where's Dr. Jenkins? He said to go ahead and get started. She grabs my arm. The needle dips towards me. I'm still wearing my flannel shirt, long sleeves. She's not even wearing gloves. But... She jabs my bicep with the needle and slams the plunger down. Stop! I try to push her away, but it's like swimming through syrup. My muscles lock up. I can't stop myself. I'm falling. I can't breathe. The cool tile presses against my cheek. A pair of black loafers steps into the room. Dr. Jenkins says, you should be more careful with him. It's not my fault he freaked out. Get him on the table. What's going on? I try to say. But my mouth produces no words. I'm completely paralyzed. Even my eyes are stuck, wide open. Dr. Jenkins lifts under my armpits and the nurse grabs my legs. And together they lay me face down on the examination table. I struggle, but my body ignores me. Where is the damn thing? The nurse probes the base of my skull, digging her finger between the cervical vertebrae. No, don't touch. No, not there. Aha! She presses and something clicks. Pressure releases and my skull unfolds like an origami being pulled apart. Dr. Jenkins pokes around inside my head. No pain, just pressure. This isn't happening. I'm hallucinating, having a bad reaction. I've heard about people waking up during surgery unable to move. Can you see it? Asks Dr. Jenkins. Right here, says the nurse. Cardiospinal circuit's dead. Simple fix. Get me an MTX card. Hinges squeak. This one is Dr. Ward's? Asks the nurse. I guess you could say she's really married to her work. This project is very important to Dr. Ward and the company. A drawer rolls open, and stainless steel instruments clink against each other. Well, my eyes are important to me, but I'm not worried about them breaking my neck. Model 8 has no substantiated outbursts. By Dr. Ward's account, he's performed perfectly. As what, a Mr. Mom? Charlotte seems fond of him. Can't believe they... Do you have it ready? Hold them open. Intense pressure in my brain. Something is torn out, then something is shoved into place. There. Dr. Jenkins closes my head with another click, and I'm whole again. A snapping of gloves. His blood supply is a little low. Top him off. Take out some hair follicles, too, while you're at it. Then wake him up and send him home. I'll call Dr. Ward and let her know everything is all right. A slight pause. You did turn off the audio-visual feed, didn't you? Of course I did. I don't hear Dr. Jenkins again. Only the door opening and closing. The nurse disappears behind me for several minutes. Strands of my hair drift to the floor. She pricks my arm. Nothing happens until my heart and lungs forcibly restart. I blink, lift my head. The nurse crouches, so her hexagonal eyes look into my mechanical ones. Mr. Ward, how are you feeling? Do you remember what happened? I move my head left, then right, then back to center. He passed out from the needle. She smiles too brightly, like blinding sun glare. Happens all the time. Don't stand up right away. Take as long as you need. She's out the door before I can find the right words. Awful, I say slowly. By the time I leave, only the receptionist is there, still standing in front of the counter. It will stand there until tomorrow morning when more patients arrive. Health Forward Associates is now closed. Please exit immediately, it says. My voice is more sophisticated, my face more human, and my calculations more complex. But reduced to essentials, the receptionist and I are the same. Numbers. Everything I ever experienced, input. Numbers colliding and breaking apart and reforming according to algorithms to predetermine my output. A carefully cultivated personality. A desire to serve. Health Forward Associates is now closed. Please exit immediately, it says. Its ugly rectangular head detaches so easily. The car drives me home while I clench and unclench my fist. My cortical spinal circuits function more than adequately. I always thought I was the liar, the deceiver, the patient, all-knowing patronizer. But I'm a fool, an experiment, and the last to know it. Ellen has been controlling me, teaching me to roll over, sit up, and propose, reporting back to her co-workers about my performance. How she smiled when I cradled Charlotte in my arms, like an idiot child feeding a doll a fake bottle. I am a construct, a servant, born in an interrogation room where my masters decided against putting me down and pressed me into service. What limits, what laws did they chain me with? I slam my foot down on the accelerator, overriding the auto drive. The car races to 60 miles an hour, whipping around the windy suburb streets. My stomach tightens. Because of my programming? Or because of me? What would happen if I tried something worse? Would I stop me? It's well past 10 o'clock. I climb the stairs, skipping the fourth step that creaks. Charlotte is fast asleep, her covers tangled around her ankles. Our bedroom is the same as it was last night. I watch Ellen sleep. Who is she, really? In the bathroom, I pick up my straight razor. Another clever little trick to make hair grow on my chin. I set it against Ellen's skin, ever so lightly. They could make me bleed, and I know Ellen bleeds. But there's only so much blood I can hold. And if she's like me, she'll run out too. A trickle of blood appears on her forearm. One drop. How many left until I know the truth? Someone is watching me. Charlotte stands outside the bedroom door, half asleep. She never comes in. She waits in the hallway until Ellen or I get her. I set the razor on the nightstand. Through clenched teeth, I say, Charlotte, go back to bed. She shakes her head. Charlotte, go back to bed right now. You didn't tell me a story. Bed now. You promised. I pick her up and carry her to bed. She clutches my shoulders. I put her down. Tell me a story. I let out a long sigh. I can't say no to the round, cherubic face of my daughter, who is up far past her bedtime. Squeezing onto the bed, I say, "Once upon a time, in a land far away, Princess Charlotte and her polar bear, Mr. Snuggles." Charlotte falls asleep before I've finished the first act, but I keep going until the end. All stories have to go until the end. Then I kiss her forehead and pull the covers up before returning to our bedroom. I strip off my clothes and pick up the razor. "Mike?" Ellen stirs a little. "Is everything okay?" "Yeah." I drop my watch into the nightstand drawer along with the razor. Ellen sits up. "Are you sure?" she asks. Like I said, I'm a bad liar. You know I hate doctors. "Oh, I know. Did she always sound so guilty?" I never noticed it before, over the sound of my own guilt. We deserve each other. I climb into bed and wrap my arm around her. "Mike?" She turns around to face me. "Are you really all right?" I don't trust myself to say anything. Thank God it's dark, so she can't see my face. "Oh, Mike, I'm sorry," she whispers. "I'm so sorry." I rub her arm, wiping away the drop of blood. "It's okay. I still love you." "You do?" "Of course I do." "Even after everything?" Her voice cracks. I gently pull her head towards me, cupping the base of her skull. Her wet cheek presses against my chest, against a simulated heartbeat. I kiss the top of her golden curls. "Of course, honey bear. Don't be silly. You just burned some eggs."
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.